This recording is a production of Faith Builders Educational Programs. This presentation was recorded at REACH 2015, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders on March 19 and 20, 2015.
We do want to spend some time together here talking about effective family living in demanding ministry environments. I assume that you read the description, but I'll just begin there and we'll see if we can we can knock on some of these issues. It is a story told too often. A well-intentioned couple engage in a demanding ministry and wake up one day to discover their children have strayed from the good path. Sometimes even a marriage will break apart under the stress of ministry. Tragic indeed. But isn't it possible to grow families in such high-pressure situations? And today we want to explore perhaps some of those possibilities. What I'd like to do is just spend a little time talking with you about some of the things that I've learned, that Sheila and I have learned. And so you can check on me here all day long if you want to. Mrs. Lehman is sitting back there in the corner. So we've had our times of demanding ministry. Let me tell you about one, maybe right to begin with. Well, first of all, just a little bit on my background here. Grew up in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, currently serving at Faith Builders, but 16 years of teaching in Chambersburg and some 21 years now, or close to it, in Guy's Mills. But while we were in Chambersburg, we had a prison ministry. And Sheila and I could write whole books on that prison ministry. We had people living with us. And I remember particularly just thinking now of a time we had a gentleman living with us who was bipolar. That's where I got my education in psychology. And it really was, but I shall never forget the evening that my children are lined up here on the sofa, and Sheila's with them, and we were having family devotions, and I always told stories to the children standing up to illustrate and to demonstrate and all of that. And while I'm doing that on the door, this is, I don't know, 9:30 in the evening, something like that, I go to the door and I open it. And there is a state policeman standing big and tall. He says, "John Fremgen here?" And I said, "No." He said, "Do you mind if I come in?" I said, "Sure." I said, I don't mind. No, it's fine. Sure, come on in. So he comes in. And he had to walk around the little partition, and he looked around, and there's my children all lined up on the sofa. There's my wife. He broke into a big smile, and he said, "Okay, I think this will be fine." But he walked back out, and then I walked out on the porch, and I looked, and there's six cruisers sitting around our house, and he's, of course, knocking on my door, and I'm sorry, "What's the deal?" Actually, I did know. It turned out that John was in the state hospital, and he was, because of his bipolar, and he had called me that evening, said that he was coming down to pick up his little Vega that he bought for $200, but was paying $1,200 a year for insurance on it, sitting in my garage, and he's coming to pick this thing up, and he's taking off. Okay, so we're in our house, not sure if John Fremgen is going to show up or if he's not going to show up. We don't really quite know what we ought to do if he does show up. then the knock on the door and all of that, that brings plenty of trauma. That's just one moment. I could actually tell you of worse. I won't. These are pressures that we experience in ministry, but they, a lot of times, they're not that dramatic. They're far less dramatic. Nevertheless, it's that pressure. And what we want to talk about here a bit is just a couple of the ideas that Sheila and I have learned over the years that have been helpful. I want to share those with you. I'm hoping to give at least 10 minutes here on the end for you either to share experiences or maybe raise some questions about where you're at. I should say that we have 7 children and we have 16 grandchildren. Six of our children are married and one's still at home. Perhaps you've seen Jordan about here. He's an FP student who is also helping out here today. So the Lord's been good to us, and we've experienced some really, really good times, some difficult times, and so on. But we want to talk about some of the things that we've learned here over the years. You have a handout. I've become a one-pager teacher. Taught school now for 37 years, yes, and figured out if you can get it all on one page, the front page, you'll get more across to a group of students than if you have a really nice long handout that has 100 different things on it that they're going to forget anyway. So my goal here is for you to remember just the front page. Okay, here it is. A couple big words that I'd like to just share with you up front. You see the word sustainable here. If I were giving 3 words that my ideas or what I'd like to share with you this afternoon will surround, it would be sustainability. They will be, in addition to that, we'll see a little farther downstream here, resilience, all the way down number 2, and finally habit. So you can write those down and be thinking about those as we start. Sustainability, resilience, and habit. I've known a number of people who, very good people, very engaged in ministry, doing very well, but found out that what they were doing was not really sustainable. You could not carry through over the long haul. So that's going to be my first push here, is what does it take to create a sustainable family life? And I added to that, in a sustainable ministry. I felt, and I just want to say up front, I felt myself on the edge plenty of times. See a couple students here from way back in the years that I taught school in Chambersburg, and I just don't mind telling you that more than once I went home and would say to Sheila, that's it, I've had it. I'm just fed right up to here. I'm done with this, I'm going to farming. And my wife, as you'll hear a little bit later on here, is very astute, and she would not say anything for about 2 days. And then about after 2 days, she would say, well, my dear husband, I figured out by now, I know you better than yourself. Go to farming if you want to, but it will just be about 2 months, and you'll say, what am I doing here? Why did I ever leave teaching? So it's good to have somebody like that in your life. So sustainable family living in sustainable ministry. And I have just a couple of points. These are not going to be new points to you at all, I don't think. But wait till the end, and I'll maybe try there to share some of the ideas that have been helpful to us that pull it together for us. So here you see first, worship God together as a family. Now, I just know, while I say that, that is so cliche-ish. It is just, of course. A preacher ought to say that. A teacher ought to say that. But I want to say it again. Worship God together as a family. Now, you'll hear me come back to this point a number of times here today. We pick up on something like this and then we're going to do it. So we do it. And then we fail a little bit, and then we do it some, and then we fail a little bit, and after a while, things just kind of fritter away from us. Sustainability does not mean perfectionism. It means it's a sustainable thing that you do habitually. It's something that actually carries you through tough times. Remember, my 2 words here are sustainable and resilience. The resilience piece is what is built into your family life and into your daily life that can actually take the impact and swing with it and bounce back? Because you will have impacts. I promise you, you'll have them. Okay, so if you're feeling that the two pieces I want to hammer on here is what's sustainable and what you have to build in for the moment when you're going to get hit, because you will get hit. If you're an effective ministry person, you'll get hit. And what kind of resilience is built in there? That's what we're after here. So worshiping God, back to that just a little bit. So we're not looking here for perfectionism so much as we're looking for a genuine worship. Already told you. So in our family devotions, rather than actually reading the story out of the storybook or even out of the Bible, I would actually take the time ahead of time to read through the story just to get a couple of the details down again. Good storytellers always have some impact. So you work on this and you get this story down. And then when my children are gathered in there and they're sitting on the sofa and I'm doing the preaching, I'm just up telling the story just as it's been recreated in my own mind. What's the point? The point is worship must live. It must be alive for it to really be part of this sustainable structure that we're talking about here. Secondly, we're in this together. And I have just three categories here. The first one, the role of papa or dad presence. This is actually a little more generic, a little more general. But I'll just share it with you for whatever it's worth. You know the ending verse in the Old Testament from the book of Malachi says something very, very fascinating. He says there, in my words, that, when Elijah returns, he's going to turn the hearts of the fathers to the sons to the children, the hearts of the father to the children and the children to the father. And then the ending phrase is very negative, lest I send a curse on the earth. And just in recent months, I've begun to say, we are living under the curse of fatherlessness in our generation. We really are. I don't need to even go into details on that. Just look out into a secular world and you can easily see that. I forget what the percentage is by now, but it's very high. And Gordon, I don't know if you remember this, but probably way back in the 1980s, I remember when I was teaching school and I was looking at some of these statistics, I said to my students, 1985 or something like that, if these statistics are right, if they really are, and what they were saying is that by the year 2000, I think over 50% of the children born into Western civilization were going to be born, they would not know at least one of their parents, and a certain percentage would not have any idea who either of their parents were. I said, if that's true, you're going to grow up, your children are going to grow up in a very different world than what I grew up in, I promise you. And it's called a curse. Okay, but now forget, don't look out there. We're talking about our families and sustainability and resilience. You need dad presence. Now, careful here. Don't automatically equate that with time. I'll be very fair with you. I watch the generation today, and younger families here, forgive me, but very, very, very child-oriented. Johnny this and Johnny and Sally this. That's all good, but I'm talking about something a little bit more than this. When I'm talking about dad presence, it's not just the amount of time that you're actually there and Junior and Sally and whoever actually sees you. It's not just that. It's a bigger sense of presence than that. again, I need to reference my wife here. So think of how this works. I'm away at school, or I'm in the prison for a Bible study, or wherever it is, or at Faith Builders, lots and lots of different things going on, and the children are misbehaving or something like that, and Sheila says to them, now you wait till Dad gets home. That's an extension of Dad's presence, if it really holds water. In other words, if it really is going to make a difference, that when Dad shows up, we'll come to terms with whatever is going on here. I struggle with this a little bit, because the main thing I'm wanting you to see is don't think automatically time. Time is an issue here, but it's not the only issue with Dad presence. Dad presence is far bigger than that. I grew up on a dairy farm. The truth of the matter is, my dad was a farmer and a serious farmer. So there were days that I didn't see him any more than what my children saw me. But the fact of the matter is, there was always that presence. When I was sweeping the barn or whatever I was doing, I knew that there was a person that stood behind everything that was going to hold me accountable and was going to make sure that things actually went in a good direction in a general way. And that's, I'm struggling to communicate that, but I sure hope you can pick up on it. That idea that dad presence is more than just, the fuzzy-wuzzy times that we spend together. Now, don't blank those out. You need those. I hope you're hearing me. But if you think that you're going to create family sustainability on that alone, think the second time. It will take more than that to actually create what I'm talking about here. But the role of mama, listen, I'm not going to have Sheila stand up, but I've said this publicly and I'll say it again. I'll say it anywhere, anytime. If I've had any success in my public ministry, at least 51% of that belongs to her. Ladies that are sitting here, I want to tell you, we're talking here, I don't know, maybe we're ministry, and it's the men. I'll just be very, very, very quick to say, the woman who stands by your side, or if you're standing by a man's side, you can ruin that man's ministry in a moment. Not just in a moment, I shouldn't quite say it that way, but you can cut his effectiveness in half just like that. You can do exactly the opposite. Hats off to my wife. That's the way my wife has always been. I started teaching school in 1978, not bragging or complaining. I'm just telling you that in those days, particularly, school teachers did not make very much money. maybe today it's still the same, but my experience has been it's gotten a little better over the years. But the fact of the matter is, the wrong lady, that ministry would have gone flat. I would have never been able to sustain that with somebody by my side who was demanding in terms of lifestyle and finances and on and on and on and on and on. And I'm not just saying this to brag her up a little bit. I'm just telling you, it's true. It really is true. I've observed this. So just in case you miss the point, we are in this together. the ladies, the more you stand in alongside and support, and just in thousands and thousands of ways. I just told Sheila the other day, I thanked her again for how she has stood by me philosophically. Listen, ladies, you men all know this. I've told her, I said, look, I can put up with a lot of flack, I can take a lot of things. But if you're against me and you disagree, I'm in trouble. and I really mean that. It's just that way. So do whatever it takes to build that piece, build it well for sustainable family living. And for us, that does mean time, because I can almost guarantee you, if you're in any kind of a difficult ministry, you're struggling with the time that you ought to have with the missus. Well, you need to take time. You need to make time to do that. And so just to suggest that to you. The role of sons and daughters, joyful cooperation. We could spend more time on this. I don't need to tell you, this is not, there's no perfect formula here. There's no buttons you push and shove that makes all this just work neatly and nicely. And every day the children are highly cooperative, and every day mom and dad agree, and dad's present enough and all that. I mean, there's ups and downs with this. Always come back and go at it again. Always pick yourself up off the floor and keep moving. I'll go to the next point here. Physical body health considerations, good food, good rest, good exercise. It was in Dr. Beiler's session this morning, and he talked about a number of these. Why should I need to say more here? This one got me. Sheila said to me here just not real long ago, she said, well, I sure hope that they have work in heaven, because if they don't, you're not going to be happy. I laughed at first, but then later I said, oh, man, I thought to myself, okay, what was she saying? Okay, hear me out. Being a hard worker does not make you holy. Getting 4 hours of sleep when you ought to be getting 8 hours of sleep does not make you holy. There's nothing holy about that at all. In fact, now if it's called for, I always say it this way, short term extending of yourself in that way is okay. It is not sustainable. It is not sustainable. You cannot sustain that. I don't need as much sleep as some. I did for years on 6 hours of sleep while I was trying to teach school and keep things going. Look, I'm not a young man anymore. What's sustainable? I found out that's not sustainable for me. Long about, I don't know, age 45, or I don't know what time it was, I figured out I could not sustain that type of thing. And so I upped it to 7 hours. And you know what? I'm just a happier man. when I've got an adequate rest and have my life put together physically reasonably well. And I'm just saying to you, brothers and sisters, particularly you brothers, pay attention here. Short-term pressure, okay. Long-term, you can't do it. It'll get you. I just will confess to you what happened to me when I was 32 years old. I got Crohn's disease. Now, it'll knock you back. If you don't know what it is, go look it up. It's nasty. Okay, that'll knock you back, I promise you. Okay, and I just realized that I was just pushing and pushing and burning the candle, the two ends of the stick, for too long. And the fact of the matter is, your health cannot sustain that. So I really do strongly urge you to pay attention to a good diet. Reasonable here, I always use the term moderation. I'm not a health food nut. I like health food. That's no problem with that, and I think it's a good thing. Not against it, but good moderation there. Good rest. Good exercise, and I would underscore exercise. Take care of your body. Okay. Emotional, mental health. Know your strengths and weaknesses, and you've got them. I don't know if you know what they are or not, but you should know what they are. Your strengths and your weaknesses. The second one there is similar to that. Know your limitations. And don't go beyond that. Sustainability and resilience. Okay? And particularly here, we're on sustainability. And third one I have found is what really been helpful for me. Discover what refreshes. Okay? So none of us are supermen in the sense that we can just take anything. And so the fact of the matter is, I found it helpful to know what I do well and what I can sustain and what I don't. And what I don't do well, I try to fluff off to somebody else. And what I can manage reasonably well, I do. Know your limitations. Discover what refreshes. Maybe you'll have questions about that a little bit later on. Financial budget here. Here's an amazing thing. I'm not a marriage counselor, but I'm told that marriage counselors will say over and over again that a lot of times the original breakdown, the original collapse in the marriage that begins to create issues is some kind of financial issue. And I find that interesting, and it is fascinating that as a pastor, I've discovered there's a lot of truth to this, that things, if they're not going well financially, that it bleeds off in other ways, okay? Now, I hope you understand, none of these are panaceas. So if you end up, okay, we got that one taken care of, well, it's just parts and bits and pieces of things that come together that create strength and sustainability. This is one of them. And it's one of them that I find often, will sometimes get people down. So create a budget that works. Just a couple of comments on this. People have asked me over and over again, I already told you that, you know, Sheila was able to stretch dollars a long ways. What budget? Do you have a budget? We always say yes. But it's very simple. We don't spend more than what we have. We don't spend more than what we make. It's that simple. That's how we survived. Now I don't want to go into details on it, but you know, looking back sometimes, I wonder what we thought we were doing, you know, living on just a little wee bit, but we managed it. So that. A second thing I would say about it is perhaps it should be more sophisticated than this. I've been amazed though at how many people have a budget that is so sophisticated that they can't hardly manage a thing. I just simply use, when I am on a stricter budget, I just simply use an Excel spreadsheet. I can see it in one glance. Remember, I'm a one-page guy. If you can get it on one page, people can follow it, they can make sense of it, you can yourself, you can see it at one glance. You want something that's easy to enter, something that's easy to take care of. Because I've done this before. You start into a QuickBooks program or something like that, trying to keep some things. There's too many clicks and it's too long to get all this stuff up and this and that and the other thing and categorized and in this column. Too much. Make it simple so that any member of the family can look there very quickly and see where the money's going. Okay, so, but create a budget. Enjoy the challenge of living with less. I think that's what really made it sustainable for Sheila and I. Is that we found out it actually was a lot of fun. Taking what the average consumer in this world would say is impossible to live on and finding a way to actually do it. And I'm not saying that you can do the impossible, but it's amazing what you can do if you actually set your heart to say, we'll enjoy this. If we got $10, how can we enjoy it the most? Well, maybe it's an ice cream cone. I don't know, but you know, whatever. Enjoy the challenge of living with less and give. Finally, in this category here, remember that your family will change. Okay? On this thing of sustainability, this is what amazes me. Sometimes we don't take this into account. Stop right now and ask yourself this question. In 10 years, how old will my oldest child be? Particularly if you're a young man. It always surprises you. We woke up one day to realize that our oldest daughter just turned 39, and that's the age at which we moved to Faith Builders. We're like, can't be. Impossible. What in the world happened? How did that happen? Your family will change. Things will need to change as your family changes. Plan to change. And particularly identify times of transition when there are additions to the family. So a baby is born. Our youngest, Jordan, was born and was, we had been at Faith Builders, who had home for a year. He was born in Chambersburg. We moved back. He was 5 months old. When you have a baby in your arms, that makes a difference. That makes a difference. Child to adolescence to teenager to adult, it'd be interesting to take some time and actually walk through those, but we won't. But your children change. And the demands change. The questions change as time goes along. So the fact of the matter is you have to be prepared for that. And some of us even have the privilege now of thinking about empty nest. And what kind of changes does that mean? So currently, Sheila and I are just kind of in the thing of asking ourselves, what should change about our ministry and the way we do things? Because it does represent a change for us. Okay, Now move on here to quickly talk a little bit about resilience, creating a resilient family lifestyle for a time of crisis. Here's the single most important piece I can give to you, I think. It's the importance of the capacity to trust and trustworthiness. You know, this occurred to me a couple of years ago, and I'm still pondering it. The difficulty with people, including me, but particularly this generation, and I'm not talking about, most of us have grown up in pretty solid families and so on, but one of the bigger issues is the lack of the capacity to trust. Now, there's a big gap between that and just simply not trusting. In fact, I'm not so sure, I'm surprised at this. Here's a child. Take a little boy who is growing up. He doesn't know mom or dad. He maybe was chucked around to three or four different foster families and all of that. And now he's supposed to marry this lady and love her. Do you realize that he has lacked a serious developmental piece in there somewhere that if I were to state it in some kind of terms, it's he'll be very fortunate if he has the capacity to love, simply because the model was never there. Okay, now, just come back here quickly and think about our homes and our families and all of that. Look, again, just in marriage counseling, if there's trust there, you got a chance of saving the marriage. If the trust is gone, if that one is gone, you're in trouble. Just in real trouble. So the fact of the matter is, what Sheila and I did as parents, and as we were trying to be involved in some pretty involved ministries, is to actually culture this notion of trust. And I think I do, well, let me go down through here, and then I'll come back and give you just a slide or so that I use on this periodically. Okay, so first in God, then toward family members, then toward the faith community. And I want to underscore faith community there. I know you've been preached at on this point, but in terms of sustainability and resilience, if you're involved in a ministry, just to be very frank, I'm involved there at Faith Builders. I'm also a pastor at Meadville Mennonite Chapel. Just recently handed over the head pastorship there to my son-in-law. But the fact of the matter is, we tried hard to live our lives in such a family that our church community, even while we were in ministry, our church community knows that we are committed to them. When I say committed to them, we will take off our back whatever we can to help to make this become a successful congregation. Of course, there are limitations. But sometimes I have seen this happen. I've seen families who, here's their church community and here's their ministry, and it's not, they might only be 10 miles apart or so, but they defer so often to their ministry that here's the people that get hit up on this. It's their children. It's the children, and they're all of a sudden wondering, now, where do I belong and who do I fit with and who is my church community and all that whole list of things. Look, whatever you do, even if you live at a distance, go out of your way to make sure that you culture in your children and in your family that idea that our allegiance, we have a strong allegiance, perhaps even our first allegiance ahead of our ministry, is to our local church community where we're going to plug in. I want to urge that. Now, I know there just are limitations. I understand that very, very well. But minimize those limitations. Do whatever you can do to minimize the limitation and maximize the exposure of your children. Because, see, here's the issue. Junior is 10 years old. He's going to be 16 in 6 years. Okay? In 6 years, if during those intervening 6 years, something has kind of gone astray in that church, that faith community relationship, they're just a growing distance. You're going to create more time and more energy that you have to put into that teenager. Because of that, you'd have been far better off to have just been building 6 years of solid faith community participation that that 16-year-old son just fits right into as he comes up and it's time for him to make his decisions about church fellowship and all that type of thing. Be careful of letting that distance grow. Okay? Build strong fibers of habit. Now, some of you perhaps have had me at Faith Builders, and you're going to hear me hammer on something here again that has really become clear to me. I see some of the folks back here from the boys' camps, and they've learned this. We ought to learn it too, the strength and the power of habit, of doing things this way. And, it's funny. I like spontaneous living and having a lot of fun, and we do. We do. So don't hear me taking a shot at that, but hearing me tell you, do hear me say that the resilience is built into even your personal life and into family life when there are habits that carry you through the tough times. Have you ever had those moments when you're just about had it? I do. Students who've had me, don't say anything, but there have been moments when I've actually taught classes almost just out of sheer habit. Okay, this is the way you do it. And just kind of did it because of the habit of always doing it that way. And I know this generation has grown tired of habits and traditions and things like that, but they ought to rethink it. Because the fact of the matter, it's many times, those are the pieces that give the resilience. Okay, and if they're not there, then when the tough time comes, the rubber band snaps, rather than springing back, because there wasn't enough habit and regularity and ways of doing things. So for us, it was get up at the same time. It was have breakfast together. It was, and I could go down through a list of things that we just insisted had to happen. Did we miss occasionally? Yes, but they were habits. They were habits that we could count on picking up and would carry us on when things got a little tough. And then, know the limitations of your family's crisis capacity and be aware of the finish line. Okay, I'm just going to let that one go because I want to give you a chance here to talk a little bit. Let me show you two slides that I use a fair amount in teaching on some of this material here. Principle-centered family living. I'd give you four levels to consider. I'll probably have to click through it this way. So family mission and goals. What's your family about? Sheila and I were never big on sitting down and spending hours and hours and hours trying to get a family mission statement written out, but it's valuable. What are you about? What is your purposes? Alignment. So work, play, entertainment. I was just over here listening to Matt Landis talk a little bit. He had some really good things to say about the media. It's funny. Just not too long ago, I wrote a little note to a father that I know that I just have wondered about some of the things that he's been doing. And, you know, I said, look, here's what it's like to sit down and talk with you. What I really want to know, I know what your family goals are, but there's a couple of pieces here. I'm not sure how it's making sense. I'm his pastor, so I feel like I have a little bit of an opportunity or maybe even an obligation to speak in a little bit. The fact of the matter is, if this is your family ministry, and some of you have pretty well-defined ministries, some not so well-defined, but this is defined, the question is, how does family life actually align there? Now, don't misunderstand me. There are times to just kind of do something this evening that is totally different. It has nothing to do with anything that we are, that the ministry per se. I'm all for that, picnics or hikes or whatever. But the question, I see sometimes people who have a particular ministry and then I look at their lifestyle and I say, my goodness, how in the world does that add up? There's not alignment there. That's the idea. Second here is family roles. Who's in charge? Delegated responsibilities. And the question here is empowerment. Talking about dad presence. I'm a firm believer that children should have chores. I'm a firm believer that the family should have some things that they pull together on. That it's life, okay? That works the best if we know who's in charge and if there has been appropriate delegation and empowerment to do so. That's true of any organization. Third one here is family relationships, and here we get to the trust issue. I haven't gotten to the core yet. So family relationships are very important. I won't go into the details on this, but just to give you an idea, I remember the evening I came home, and one of my daughters was talking to a young man that I didn't think she should be talking to. We had a major confrontation. Not really a confrontation. I mean, I had a lot to say. But you need to hear me right. I realized that by the time I got done saying what I had to say, I also had an apology to make. Okay? I didn't back up my basic message was, well, relationships will not begin this way under this roof. Okay? But I realized by the time the discussion was done and I had 10 minutes to think about it, that I have a relationship to culture here and to protect and to care for, and I want my daughter to trust me. Okay? And I realized for that to happen, I had an apology to make. And so I did. I apologized for getting out of hand. I didn't apologize for my position. But I apologized for getting out of hand. That's just one among hundreds of stories I know that you could tell too that have to do with what we're talking about here in family relationships. But what I'm wanting to push you to think about is there's a lot of space for things to happen inside of a family and recovery to happen if there's trust there. If you've actually gone to the bother of building the kind of trusting relationships that are required, you can make mistakes. And you have space to move. But if that's not there, well, maybe I'll just give an example. I always tell, when I'm training teachers, I tell them, look, if the students know you love them, you can make 100 mistakes and they'll forgive you every time. But if they suspect you don't, on the first, second, or third, you're done. It's a little bit the same idea here. In family relationships, if there's trust there, then all this bumping around and making mistakes and this and that and the other thing, it's all part of the ebb and flow of family life. But if the trust is not there, you're in trouble. And so I always end that discussion by saying, so the real question for all of us, whatever ministry we're in, is personal trustworthiness, and that is, have I earned that? Now, none of us really earn it. I just admit that and confess it up front, okay? But I do know that that sort of is there, and I'll tell you this ahead of time. If dad has personal trustworthiness, there's tremendous resilience in a family. If he doesn't, it's an issue. It's an issue. So the challenge is for all of us along those lines. And I'll give you yet the next slide very quickly. This one I call crossing the bridge. Dylan, I think you saw this one, didn't you? I share it everywhere I go because I know that in the end, this is the deal. I call this a crossing the bridge. Sustained ministry, resilient ministries. Here's what I've discovered. The problem is not with ideals. I think I could go back through this room and ask for your ideals about how to do family, and I can almost guarantee you there would be hardly any disagreement, if any, in this family, in this room. I think we would all have the most outstanding ideals. Really. In fact, in my years of prison ministry, I discovered that you could ask a hardened criminal who has a son, what would you like for your son to be? And he could give you good answers. The problem is not the ideals. The issue is getting across the bridge where ideals become habits of life. That's the issue. It's almost always the issue. And so if I could just urge you, so we'd spend about, 45 minutes here talking a little bit about life and family, sustainability, and resilience. But I know one thing. I did that in 45 minutes. And we can walk out those doors, and if it makes no difference in the way we actually live out the habits of life. It was fun talking to you. I just know that's the issue. Find me, Brian, get a boy across that bridge, and you can send him home, and he's got a good chance. But if he doesn't get across there, that's hope and prayers. Okay, I'm going to stop right there.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.